Well, happy Cyber Monday to you guys and gals. Cyber Monday. Isn't every day Cyber Day anymore? I mean, when you think about it, everything we do is tied either to our cell phones, to a computer, to our televisions, which are more internet savvy now than they used to be. I didn't even know that I could talk to my TV until about a year ago. Can you talk to your TV? I got one of those Samsung 65-inch jobs, and it's called a smart TV. So I push this little button, and I can talk to it. And I say, like, yeah, play a Wheeler Dealer for me. It's one of my favorite shows. And it just brings it right up. And I can watch episodes of all the episodes my heart desires of Wheeler Dealer. The episode that I watched day before yesterday was a episode on a 1956 Thunderbird. I just bought a 1956 Thunderbird, and I wanted to see what Ed had to do to it. Ed's the mechanic with the crazy hair. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not, but just a great show about how to prep a car and take care of problems, leaks, and things like that. Doesn't that sound fascinating? I know there's some of you saying, what is wrong with him? But I tell you, I've just got the disease. But anyway, this 56 Thunderbird is a decent car. I talked about it the other day. I think it's got the smaller displacement. I think it's a 292 cubic inch V8 engine. And I'm not going to do much to it. I need to try to find a top for it. It's one of those that has the porthole. Well, to be honest, I think the 56 didn't have a porthole. I think it was the 57 when they started the little round hole in the what would you call that? The B pillar. And it really makes them look cool. But I don't know. I've got a decent convertible top. Transmission's leaking a little bit. That's kind of a bad thing because you have to pull the engine and the transmission to fix a transmission leak. So we're hoping we can get past that. But I just love the body style on that car. And so we started work on my 66 Ford Mustang that I bought a couple weeks ago. The car drove absolutely terrible. It had, or should I say terribly, it drove terribly. It had bias ply tires on it, which is, you know, what was available back in 1966. No radials back then. The car had a lot of play in the steering, so I ordered new wheels and tires. It had 4.5-inch wheels on with these bias ply red wall tires. And yeah, I mean, it looked vintage and everything, but I wanted a more modern look and also a more modern handling and performance. So we put the wheels on. Friday. Yeah, we put the wheels on and the new radial tires, and it drove phenomenally, but still too much play in the steering. So now I got to order a steering box, and so that, you know, it just keeps coming. When you get into old cars and you want to make them right, then you've got to have your own mechanic, and you got to be able to do that kind of stuff yourself. I can accelerate it better than a lot of people can because I do have a couple technicians that can do it. You know, when you're an individual, I respect those people a lot who buy a car and do it all themselves. Now, that's the true car person that does that. I am fortunate enough to have techs that work for me that can do this kind of stuff. I have to pay for it, and I have to make the decisions, you know, what to order and what look am I going for and all that kind of stuff. But they're the ones that have the real skills. So they mounted and balanced those tires that we ordered, and we ordered slightly larger tires for the rear than we did in the front. Well, I thought they were slightly larger. They ended up being a lot larger. And now my 66 Mustang looks like a drag racer. It's got the tires are obviously way bigger in the back than they are in the front, so that's not going to cut it. So I told Johnny, I said, let's go down a size. And so we'll be doing that next. But anyway, after I bought the The 66K code car, which K code again is just the engine designation, it's the high performance engine, was approached about buying another 66 Mustang that I'd been pursuing several months ago, and if a guy finally decided he'd sell it, I mentioned that last week. And after test driving that thing and taking my life into my own feet, I could not stop the vehicle. I had to either maybe even perform a Fred Flintstone. You know what that is? That's where you open the door and stick your foot out and drag it on the ground so you can get stopped. I really didn't have to do that, but I thought I was going to plow into somebody because the brakes are so bad. So it's got, it's got drum brakes on the front and the rear. So I talked to my Ford guy, Charlie Starnes, and I said, Charlie, what do I need to do? And he says, well, you don't need power brakes. You just need to put disc brakes on the front. So that's what I'm going to do. And that should improve the stopping power. Now, those drum brakes that were on the front were just bad. So, I mean, I could have improved the drum brakes on the front and it would have been able to stop. But I want it to stop really good. So I'm putting disc brakes on the front. Disc brake conversion on that car, just converting the front to disc, is going to be about a $400 or $500 operation plus labor. Now, if I wanted to go with four-wheel discs, then I would have to probably convert to a power brake with a brake booster so that it would really stop good. But that you're looking at about $1,200 worth of parts and $300 or $400 in labor. I decided to go the inexpensive route. So we'll see how that works out. I'll let you know. I just love the simplicity of these old cars. It's just not hard. I mean, you still have to have some skills, you know, to be able to work on them. But it is, and the parts are readily available now. There's this company called CJ Pony Parts, where you can just order just about anything for a Ford, either a Mustang or a Bronco or something like that, any Ford trucks. Summit Racing is a great place if you've got an older car and you want to order some aftermarket parts for your older car. You can get them from them. It's just a totally different ball game working on newer vehicles. Newer vehicles have so much more electronics on them, and you've got to be an electrical engineer or at least have some skills when it comes to that to solve some of these complex problems that modern cars have. I can understand how car owners get frustrated because they have to take their cars back in several times to get it fixed. And it's just, it's not as straightforward as it used to be. You can have a braking problem used to just be mechanical parts. Now it involves a lot of electronics with analog braking systems and brake warning systems that let you know, when something's not right. And then all the little lights that are on a dash that can turn on and scare you. All of those things have to be diagnosed by plugging into a port underneath the dash called the OBD2 port. If you don't have a computer, then you can't tell what's wrong with your car. And that's why you need technicians. But it is frustrating. And, I love it when a customer is having issues with another dealership or a problem with an independent provider. And then they call me and they say, hey, Lenny, I've got this problem. I need you to help me fix it. And, sometimes we can. The good thing about my operation is that I have the old school guys for old cars, and I have the highly trained technical people for later model vehicles. And so, if I can help you in any way, you've got some kind of an issue with a repair or something like that that's just not going right. Sometimes I can just call the business where you're trying to get it fixed and ask them a few questions and solve the problem like that. Sometimes it's a little bit more invasive than that. And I actually have to get a wrecker and tow it down to Gateway, to my dealership in Greenville, and solve the problem. But that's what I do. That's what I've been doing for a long time on this radio show. And I'll be glad to help you. You just need to call me. My cell phone, 423-552-2020. Or you can email me at Lenny, L-E-N-N-I-E, Lawson, L-A-W-S-O-N, 2020@gmail.com, and I'll be glad to help you out. We'll take our first break and be back here in just a second. Okay, I am back. You know, one of the things I want to talk about today are practical matters when it comes to buying a used car as is. You know, what does that really mean to a used car buyer? Does it really mean that you are buying the car with all of its faults and you are stuck with that vehicle, regardless of what was said, regardless of what was implied at the dealership? And the answer to that question is no, you are not. Now, when you buy a new vehicle from a new car dealer, obviously you are protected by the manufacturer's warranty, right? And, you know, you certainly hope that the dealership is an ethically run business and that if there are any issues, any deceptive things that happen, that, you know, you've got some degree of protection. But that's not always true. Depends on who owns the place. Really, as to how you will be treated. Let's say that a car was being unloaded off of a transport truck. It's a brand new Bronco, let's say. And a chain was accidentally dropped on the hood of that vehicle and it damaged the hood, so necessitating the hood to be replaced. And so the dealership ordered a new hood, painted the hood to match the vehicle, put it on the lot, and sold it to a person. A couple years down the road, the paint starts peeling off the hood. Now, is that something that should have been disclosed to the consumer? At my dealership, it is, but in many, I don't believe that it is. If the dealership replaced it with the exact same parts, used the exact same kind of a paint, and did everything, they do not have to disclose that that vehicle was damaged in transit. Now, could you find it out? Well, if you pulled a Carfax or something like that, if the dealership had reported it to their insurance company, then yeah, I mean, it would probably show up on the Carfax report. But that is not typically what happens when a vehicle is damaged in transit. It is the claim is handled without insurance by the people who transported the vehicle to the dealership. So there's no, you know, there's nothing to go in a Carfax report. Now, paint starts peeling off. Let's say that it does so after the three-year 36,000-mile basic warranty. If you go back to the dealer where you bought it, they'll look up their records. They would probably see that, yeah, we did have to replace this hood, and they would repair that for you at no cost. But they don't necessarily have to. They could just play hardball, and some dealers will do that. Again, it depends on the ethical nature of the dealer and what, you know, how they see their responsibility and how long that responsibility goes. But let's say that you buy a used car and you bought that vehicle as is. Are you out? You know, one thing that I want to make perfectly clear is that the lemon law that applies to new vehicles does not apply to used vehicles. It is a new vehicle only thing, whether you look at the federal lemon law or state, you know, in this case, my case, the state of Tennessee. The lemon law does not apply if you have a vehicle that you have to bring into the service department and it has to be repaired, you know, come back three times for the same problem or 30 consecutive days without you having possession of it due to repairs. If that were a new vehicle, that qualifies for the lemon law. But since it's used, it does not. But does that knock you out of being able to file any kind of a claim? No, it absolutely does not. Number one, odometer misrepresentations. That's not protected by as is, okay? So a dealer can be subject to, let's say that the miles turns out to not be accurate. Maybe, I don't know, 2 years ago the used car that you now own had to have the speedometer replaced, and the odometer ends up being incorrect on the car, and you find that out. Is that punishable for the dealer? Yes, it is if you take them to court. Anyone violating a federal odometer statute with an intent to defraud somebody is liable for the consumer's attorney fees plus the greater of $10,000 or triple damages. So you'd have to prove your damages, like reduced resale value, something like that. Punitive damages normally don't include getting your feelings hurt, but there may be some attorneys out there that disagree with that. You know, if there is a you sign an as-is agreement on a used car, and you find out that you were deceived in some way, there's a law called the Unfair and Deceptive Acts, Unfair and Deceptive Acts and Practices, and this would apply to almost any form of dealer misconduct in the sale of a used vehicle. So you are protected that way too. Any type of fraud is unaffected by as-is disclaimers. As-is disclaimers do not apply to somebody making sure that you get your title to your vehicle. Have you ever bought a car and it just took forever to get a title to the car, or forever to get your tags? You know, if a dealer, there was a dealer in Morristown, Toyota dealer, went out of business, and there were hundreds of people that never got titles to their vehicles. And, you know, when somebody files bankruptcy like that, there are protections for the person that filed bankruptcy. And I'm not exactly sure how that played out, but what a nightmare. You know, you buy a car, you finance a car, and the lender is wanting their title or your title as the security for the loan, and you can't produce it. Guess what the bank's going to do? They're going to call your loan, and you're going to have to pay it off because you didn't produce clear title. Now, most credit unions and banks are very careful about that, but it's the dealer's responsibility where you bought it from to produce a clear title. If they don't, you can sue them and recover damages for that as well. As-is does not affect any kind of manufacturer warranties that still apply to used cars. So let's say that you buy a used vehicle. The dealer had you sign an agreement saying you're buying it as-is with all of its defects. That's typically how they're phrased. But it still has a manufacturer's warranty. Well, you're covered by the manufacturer. You know, the warranty, unless it's an aftermarket warranty, like a service contract that you buy, those don't transfer from owner to owner. But now, if you have a manufacturer's warranty, that stays with the car. Now, if the dealer lied about the miles on the car or what the original delivery date was on the car of them, then you may have an issue that where the manufacturer's warranty doesn't apply, even though you think it did. But if they deceived you in that, then you can sue them for that. Now, whenever you buy a used car, make sure that with a you think it has a manufacturer's warranty. Verify the in-service date of that car. So when it was sold, when was it first reported to the manufacturer as being sold to the first owner? That is the in-service date, and that's when the warranty clock starts. So, you know, let's say that you may find out you only have 1 month left on the warranty, but if there are any issues, you can get it taken care of during that period of time. And if it goes beyond that, then the dealer will still typically honor the manufacturer's warranty. But, you know, if the in-service date, you know, if the time has expired 6 months ago, you're out of luck. So make sure you know what the in-service date and the in-service miles. The in-service miles are important because what if it was a demo and sold as a demo? Then a lot of the miles may have already elapsed. So you have to understand, you know, how this vehicle was reported to the manufacturer, because that's what activates the warranty and determines whether it's still in force or not. There's such a thing as an implied warranty, too. You may have heard about that. But let's say that you were buying a car, and all the salesperson said was, you know, this car is ready to hit the road. This car runs really good. That is an implied warranty. And so, you know, they have disclaimed all of the express warranties or written warranties or anything with their as-is sticker. However, the salesperson told you that it ran good, that it was ready to go, you know, that this car was a one-owner car and the people had no problems with it, and you can count on years of happy driving. That, folks is an implied warranty if you can prove it, if you can prove that it was said. And that's important. So how do you do that? We'll talk about that here in just a second. You know, there are so many ways that a crook can steal. I think if somebody sells you a car that is not what they represented, they're stealing from you. That's the way I've always looked at it. And, using an as-is disclaimer, it's not going to carry a lot of weight in court to somebody who does not understand the significance of the disclaimer, such as maybe they believe that as-is meant as-equipped. Maybe the dealer's conduct can also create circumstances that indicate otherwise, such as where the dealer takes steps to divert the customer's attention from the disclaimer, discourages the consumer from reading the disclaimer, or puts a hand over it. They call that in the car business a five-finger disclosure. That's where you put your five fingers over top of it so the customer can't see it. You know, I've heard about that nonsense going on, and you just don't know. Get everything in writing, and if you want to protect yourself, record the conversation. You know, if the salesperson sees, everybody has a, recording app on their phone. If a salesperson's saying, that the car is a good running car and you're going to have years of driving pleasure, say, well, hold on a second, let me turn this on. Could you repeat that? Say that again. Because, the salesperson is an agent of the dealership, and whatever he says is binding on the dealership, whether it's a new car lot or a used car lot. You know, wouldn't it be great if you could just rely on what everybody says? But sometimes salespeople will, stretch the truth a little bit. So you got to be careful, especially buying used cars. If you have any kind of issues like this, again, don't hesitate to give me a call. You know, before you buy something is the time to investigate, not after. You know, to get that in-service date, call. If the dealership doesn't know, then just get the VIN number. Let's say it's a Chevrolet. Just get the VIN number, call a Chevy dealer, and say, I need to know what the in-service date was on this particular Silverado I'm thinking about buying as a used car. I want to know what the in-service date and miles were, and just want to make sure that it's still under factory warranty as of today. And also, if there are any open recalls on this car, that's another thing you need to think about. Because, the recalls, shortage of parts and stuff like that are real issues. And if it's an important recall, wouldn't it be terrible to buy a used car and then realize that you can't legally drive it because they've told everybody to park these cars? You won't know unless you call. I hope this information is beneficial to you. It's more of what you can learn listening to this radio show, and I appreciate it very much, and we will see you tomorrow.